Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Jason Polia. Every week we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. Justin's unable to join me this week, so I'll be discussing some of the books that we don't normally talk about in our group discussion. And some of these will also be covered in that, but I'm going to go ahead and jump right in with Green Lantern number 9. Jeff Johns is doing a good job of introducing the history of the Indigo Lanterns. They've been a mystery since they first showed up with their catchphrase, "Knock," that they've been spouting off. We finally get to learn what that actually means. We get to learn the history of the Corps, which has to do with Abin Sur. And yeah, it really is building that deep, rich history behind this Corps. It makes it interesting to see that all of the characters in here, this is a bit of a spoiler, but all of the Indigo Lanterns have been villains before they learned compassion. As if the only thing you need to stop being a villain is to be compassionate for others. And I think that's a bit simplistic as to a view for villains, but I did enjoy the story and I liked seeing how this story was created. I think the cover is a bit misleading. It mentions the Black Hand. It deals very little with the Black Hand throughout this issue. He does have an appearance. But overall, this is more a story of Hal finding out the origin and meeting the person behind who created the Indigo Rings and where the Corps came from. I did like the story. There's still a bit more that's going to be revealed as they go through with this. And it'll be interesting to see how this is going to affect the rest of the Lantern universe. In particular, I'm wondering if this is going to have an effect on Green Lantern New Guardians and what's going on in that title, which, you know, based on the subtitle of that book is actually what's going to be interesting to me. Moving along, this has been a big week for the Bat books, with all of them into the first DC official crossover event, The Night of Owls. And, of course, the main book for that is Batman number 9. Yeah, this book, Scott Snyder does a wonderful job, and there had been one or two Night of Owls books that had come out before this. I didn't quite get into those as much. Particularly The Dark Knight, I didn't feel was great. This book actually had one part that kind of gave me a little bit of a jolt, because between panels, you're supposed to read The Dark Knight and then come back in and pick up where this story is going. It's just kind of a, you know, Alfred, I'm going to take care of this event, which is what happens in that book, and then I'm going after this person, and it picks right back up with him going after the second person in this. And some big reveals as to Gotham. What I love about this book is how it deals with the history and the soul of Gotham. Gotham isn't just a place. It's a living, breathing entity within this. And the fight for it between Batman and the Owls. And, you know, this starts off with a story about how when the Waynes first bought Wayne Manor, the caves beneath were filled with bats, and they purchased an owl to get rid of the bats. And when the owl left, the bats had simply gone into hiding, and now they were coming back out. And that's what Batman does. It's very symbolic of the story of what happens in this book. And you get to see Batman play with one of his toys that normally you've seen it in the Batcave, but you've very rarely, if ever, seen it in action, particularly inside the Batcave. So it was fun to see that happen. And that, of course, would be his giant T-Rex doll, or robot, I should say, because he's got a giant robot T-Rex. Yeah. So overall, yeah, high marks for what Snyder's been doing with Batman. This week also Batman and Robin came out. That was a satisfying story, but overall I wasn't as happy with it as I was with Batman. I think because this is Snyder's story arc, Snyder does the best job in telling the events that he wants to have happen and tying it in. Most of these did not have a tied in story that made it that much better. You did get to see a bit of Robin and just how different Damian is as Robin than any of the previous Robins have been, much less how he's not his father. He is certainly showing the reflections of being raised by Talia in this book and how he deals with the Court of Owls assassin that's sent after him. Batgirl also came out this week and again tied in with the Night of Owls story arc. That one was very interesting because it went back in time and actually told you the story of the assassin that sent after the commissioner. And of course, Barbara being the commissioner's daughter and being Batwoman is out after that assassin to protect her father. This one also dealt with some of the manipulation of what the owls can do. I liked that aspect of the story as well. It's something that I felt was certainly left out of The Dark Knight and for the most part left out of Batman and Robin. Of course, Snyder, knowing, you know, the Court of Owls, that's been a theme running throughout the Batman story arc, so it wasn't needed or reflected as much in Batman. But, you know, seeing that in Batgirl made Batgirl stronger. Batgirl's a title that I don't think I talk about enough. It's been an amazing run, and Gail Simone's doing a great job writing that. If you haven't been reading Batgirl, you've been kind of shaky on it, pick it up. It's one of my favorite books from DC out right now. Going to go ahead and move on now to The Suicide Squad, which was actually another crossover, albeit not an event book like the others. The Suicide Squad is crossing over with Resurrection Man. And I actually read both issues. Justin normally gets Resurrection Man, and I do not. But I went ahead and read it because of the crossover. And I actually read Resurrection Man first. If you're reading these, the story is intended for Suicide Squad to be read first and Resurrection Man to be read second. Unfortunately, they don't tell you that anywhere on the covers. You have no idea of a, you know, begin the crossover in this issue, complete it in the other one. Because they came out the same week, DC really needs to do something about that. This isn't the first time I've complained about that for DC books. They've done it with Superman with the triangle numbers. With Nightfall, they had the circle with the bat, you know, in various shades of cracking and breaking and eclipsing. So they've done similar events where they've done that, but and those are mostly longer events, I'll give it that. But, you know, even for this two issue, particularly when they come out in the same week, which DC should know, they're keeping their books on a fairly tight schedule right now. So when they're coming out on the same week, you need to give us some indication of which to read first. They did, actually, the same thing happened last week with Earth 2 and World's Finest. We discussed how different our experiences were with that last episode, with mine having read Earth 2 first and Justin having read World's Finest first. With this, I did read Resurrection Man first. And I felt it was a complete story that had no need for a crossover. It was a guest appearance of the Suicide Squad. And then I came back and read Suicide Squad, and it was a fine story, but it wasn't nearly as fulfilling as the Resurrection Man story. And it didn't feel quite as good. It was the first half, but it never had to be told. I picked up Resurrection Man, and on the first page is right at the end of Suicide Squad where they've shot him. And, of course, he's going to resurrect because that's what he does, but he hasn't done that yet. So the squad's standing over him. He's dead, and they're ready to bring him in. You can start the story there. In fact, that's what they did with Resurrection Man. But Suicide Squad, unfortunately, brought you up to that point, and there was no big revelations. All of the important stuff happened in the Resurrection Man issue. So if this plays out, it has to play out in the Resurrection Man story arc. There's nothing in this for the Suicide Squad, I felt. So, weak on the Suicide Squad, half of this. Now, if they were trying to get readers from Suicide Squad to Resurrection Man, I think they'll have done that successfully. I don't know that it's going to cross backwards. And they didn't really advertise this as a crossover event. So I think that, you know, with this not being advertised as a crossover event, you may not know if you're just reading one book to go and pick up the other when you're at the store. You're going to go, oh, I missed it. So I've got to remember next week when I go into the shop to pick my books to get the other book. So I think it was a bad job there for a crossover. I think DC needs to watch that with their marketing. They want to sell the books. They need to have something on the cover that identifies and tells you, hey, this is part of two things. You need to pick up both of them. All right, jumping over to the Marvel side. I'm going to go ahead and start off with what's been the biggest movie for the past week and probably going to continue being the biggest movie, The Avengers. And this is the Avengers Assemble title with Bendis and Bagley working on it. Up till now, you know, this is definitely a broad appeal, you know, using the characters from the movie Avengers title. And I think it's intended to pick up some of those readers that might come in after having seen the movie and interested in it. It's certainly open and available to everybody that way. this has finally gotten good. This is the third issue, and the first two were slow. And Bendis definitely is a slow build, but with the Avengers, you're not building, you're not creating much new. The villains in here are new. And actually, there's a big reveal at the end of this as to who the master villain is. But up until this issue, I've been kind of wishy-washy and almost didn't pick this issue up. Glad I made the decision to stick with it at least one more week, and I'll be getting the next issue to see where this goes. Hopefully it'll be strong enough that it'll convince me to stay on the title after this arc ends. I'm not thinking it will be, but they've done a good job keeping me interested up till now. As for books that are, you know, have got new arcs, something that's a great jump on point, we got Captain America, which is written by Brubaker. He's doing the new, this is issue 11, and he's now got a new story arc beginning. Now, the last story arc was involving Cap and losing his powers. He's got him back now. He's raring to go. And he finds out that S.H.I.E.L.D. has been infiltrated by Hydra. The premise of this is he figures that out, has to figure out who's the Hydra agents, and now he's got to go after them because their version of witness protection has been compromised and they're having their witnesses killed. Well, you can't convince people to cross the line and turn around on their friends or on, you know, the other members of their organization if you can't promise them that they're going to be safe. So this is a big thing going on for Cap to figure out who's the leak and crack down on all the Hydra agents that have been in there. It looks to be shaping up like a good, fun story arc. There's a bit of espionage. There's action. And this is the type of stuff that Brubaker had been doing with Cap when he took over the book a couple of years ago before they split into what is now Cap and Hawkeye. Previously, you know, it was Cap and Bucky. He did the Bucky run. He's done an amazing job with Cap. He's continuing to do it. I did feel the previous story arc in this book was a little weak, but reading this first issue, I'm really looking forward to this book now. I really enjoyed Cap. This is a great jumping on point at issue 11. So if you're interested in Cap after having seen the Avengers movie, that's a good part to pick up on right there. Staying with an Avengers theme, we're going to jump across the alternate Marvel universe into the Ultimates. Now, the Ultimates is another dimension of the Marvel universe where a lot of the same characters exist. There's retellings. Some things have happened quite differently in there. And the Ultimates are this universe's version of the Avengers. So, you know, again, if you like the Avengers movie, you want something that's a bit grittier, this tends to be a bit more towards the realistic aspect of superheroing than what you may find out in some of the others. It's not as cartoony as you see in some of the traditional Marvel universe. That's the appeal of the Ultimates universe to a lot of people. And of course, you got the Ultimate Spider-Man, which they've just replaced Peter Parker with Miles Morales. So you've got a whole new you've got a whole new Spider-Man in here and trying to live up to Peter Parker. But back to the Ultimates. This is issue 10, and the past three or four issues, I really wanted to drop this. I figured I'd stick it out just a little bit longer, and this issue has finally paid off for me. So, you know, just like with the Avengers Assemble, Ultimates number 10 has finally kicked it into gear and has got me interested in this story once again, and I would have dropped this. I was really not enjoying it. It was just getting worse and worse for me. I felt that I was struggling through it. And now, you know, maybe if I'd read some of the previous runs, some previous volumes of the Ultimates, I would have been a bit more interested because of some of the characters that are shown in here. But now I'm really interested in it, and I'm seeing some things that are going really well. And the heroes have taken back the initiative. That's been one of the big problems I've had with this book. You've heard me talk about it before. The heroes are the ones that need to be solving the problems, that need to be leading the way, need to be making decisions. They can't always be reacting. It's fine to have them start off as reactionary, but they have to at some point take control and make decisions. Even if those decisions are in a reaction to something that's happened, they can't always be reeling on their back legs. They have to step aside and actually step up so that the protagonist is doing something to advance the plot as opposed to just reacting and letting the villain dictate the plot. That's finally happened here in the Ultimates. You know, you've had Iron Man and you've had Thor finally man up and take a step in that direction. So, Ultimates issue 10, really good. Hopefully we'll be able to keep it up through issue 11 and 12, and we'll see where it goes from there. I'll keep you informed as I can. All right. Moving on to some of the independent titles that we read this week. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Classics. They re-released the first issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ever, done now in full color. It's interesting to see the art style in this and how it's different from the Turtles style that I'm used to looking at. It's not quite as refined as you see if you remember watching the cartoon, which is what introduced me to the Turtles. And actually, what was also interesting in this is this appeared to be a one-shot. It was intended to be the entire story arc of the origin and revenge of the Turtles against the Shredder. And it seemed to draw to a conclusion at the end of this. You don't get to see April O'Neil. You don't get to see Casey Jones. Yeah, those are characters that were added in later. And what they're going to be doing with IDW is coloring all of the original issues and re-releasing them. So if you never got a chance to experience these when they first came out and you wanted to, or you're a huge fan and maybe you've got some of these old issues but you missed some, this is a way to fill in the gap and get some of that story that you missed. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Color Classics. They did a great start with this. And I think if you're a fan of the Turtles, at least issue number one is a book to get. You may not care about getting the new run of Turtles. You may not care about all the rest of the Color Classics. But as a fan, I think Color Classics number one is a real good one to start just to pick up and see what the original artwork was, what the original feel. Yeah, the fact that they all wore red at the beginning instead of having orange and purple and blue, as well as Raphael with his red. They all wore the red. So, worth checking out. No new ground, but of course it's a reprint, so the only thing you're getting extra is color in this one. From Boom Studios, we have Higher Earth. Now, this one is interesting, and I picked this up mainly because I said for a dollar, it's worth looking at. And, yeah, I think that's a great way for comic companies to get somebody to pick up a first issue. Yeah, a lot of people buy first issues. Oh, it's a number one, so if it's going to be worth something. But since the market's dropped out, you know, between, you know, the crash at the end of the 90s and eBay, you know, and the internet, it's just so easy to find things that you really want. Number ones aren't as collectible. It's usually when there's an artist that's later becomes a breakout artist and this is some of their early work, or if there's a character that just somehow explodes and becomes huge, that it's their first appearance. And you can't always guarantee that's going to be in one that can be in any issue. So, you know, I think number ones are a great way for publishers to get people to jump in and try out something, because I know after reading Higher Earth, I'm ready for the next issue. I want to see where this is going. It really is an interesting story. You start off with a guy being teleported into a Earth that is nothing more than a giant trash heap. And on this trash heap, he's looking for a specific person and takes her back through the wormhole to another Earth. And this is going to deal with jumping through different dimensional Earths and what's going on there. There's elements of a revenge story. And it's really hard to tell because they kept a lot of things very vague. It was just kind of an introduction to the two characters meeting up. Although I got to say, the one thing that they had was a armored bear suit that you could fight in. And I'm actually sad that they left without that, because that was really cool. Because when you first introduced to the female protagonist, she's driving this bear. Yeah, and at first you think, oh, it's just a robotic bear, and then she comes crawling out of the top of it. That's really cool. I really like that. They got some interesting things that they got cooking up here. Yeah, and there are some hints as to the characters. You know, when you look at what she's collecting from the trash heaps, what she's after, those are all, you know, hints at who she is, what her character is, that she still wants to be a little girl. And I love that they can do something with something so small and visual as to what's important to her that she's collecting in this pile of trash to survive. You know, it's not food that she's after. It's these little trinkets. So a lot of character, subtle development going on there, but really enjoyable. So Higher Earth, number one, it's a dollar. Pick it up. For a dollar, it's worth it to find out, you know, what's going to happen in this book. I really can't get into the meat of it. It'd be really interesting to see what Justin would have to say on this. He read it as well. Unfortunately, you're going to have to kind of go with just my instinct on this. And I say go for it. I got one other book I'm going to discuss this week from Avatar Press, and that's Dan the Unharmable, which this book is probably my favorite book that I read this week, in part because it's new, it's fresh, and it's got an interesting take on this guy who just wants to be left alone. It's Superman as the dude from The Big Lebowski. That's kind of the impression that you're getting here. He's got super strength, he's got invulnerability, but all he wants to do is listen to his music and, you know, maybe go digging and find his next meal. He's not looking for trouble. He'll occasionally do some stuff that, he occasionally takes job essentially as a private investigator. I don't even know that you could call that his job because really he's a bum. He's, staying at, hourly rate hotels because they don't ask a whole lot of questions. He just wants to stay under the radar, out of mind, out of sight. And unfortunately, he gets a bombshell dropped on him when at the end of this book, the girl that's been looking for him throughout the whole thing says, "Hey, you're my dad and you're now my guardian." So, you've got the dude from Lebowski with superpowers who doesn't want to do anything finding out he's got a kid. So, this was a fun read. It's definitely not for the kids. It opens up with the brutal crime scene that Dan is definitely going to be investigating in the later issues. Lapham, who wrote this book, is not afraid of the gore and the nudity. Also out this week was Ferals, which I had a good time reading. And that one is full of sex and gore. And if you're a werewolf fan, then Ferals is a really good read. There's actually reasons why he gets to be as graphic as he is in there. It's not just for the shock value. This one, it was a little bit, I think, for the shock value. But some of that may also just be his style. And there's not nearly as much of that in this as there was in, say, Ferals. But certainly this book does have its moments of just brutality and meanness and nastiness. But I had fun reading Dan the Unharmable. I'm looking forward to reading future episodes of it. I think it's going to be a great book to continue to read. So, if you got some cash, I say go ahead and check out Dan the Unharmable. I think you can really enjoy it. It's not a dollar, so it's not as easy to get into as Higher Earth for a quick try, but I think it's worth it. So, we do have a couple of news stories this week. There was an auction not too long ago where Batman number one sold for $850,000 at auction. Now, the comic was graded 9.2 by the CGC. It's in very good shape for a comic that old. So, seeing it sell for $850,000, it's huge. Again, you're not going to see number one selling for that, so don't go buy just every number one you see on the shelf. Not likely to happen ever again unless there's a nuclear apocalypse. But Batman number one, of course, this is the one with Batman and Robin swinging through on the cover. And, it also has the first appearance of the Joker, first appearance of Catwoman. And it makes it the sixth most valuable comic book ever sold. So, that tells you just how much some of those real early Action Comics number one is the first. Of course, that's Superman's first appearance. So, there's a lot of collectors out there that buy these things. And if you really want, if you got some old comics, the best place to sell them is really to an auction where you're going to get the most out of it. You got to, you're going to pay the auction house, but you're likely to make the most money at an auction if you've got a really good book. So, that's just some interesting news. And lastly, we want to say goodbye to Maurice Sendak. is the author of the book Where the Wild Things Are. Many of you remember reading that when you were children. Some of you may even remember reading that or be currently reading that to your children now. So many of you may also have gone and seen the movie that came out, I believe it was last year. So Maurice has passed on, and he left a huge mark on a lot of us, you know, with the books that he's written. So unfortunately, kind of ending on a sad note there, but we'll be back, and we'll be discussing some of the movies that came out. Of course, I gave my review of Avengers last week, which is go see it on the big screen, because it is epic. It is epic and awesome. And yeah, spoiler-free review, just go see it on the big screen. If you're a superhero fan, you're going to love it. If you enjoyed the Captain America movie, the Thor movie, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, go see it. You're going to love it. If you enjoyed Buffy the Vampire Slayer, yeah, Joss Whedon was the showrunner on that. He's the writer and director of Avengers. So you'll know what you're in for there. So any of that stuff, if you liked it, you'll love this. Yeah. If you're listening to this podcast, odds are you're going to love it. So go on, head out there, catch that. And we will, let you know how to get a hold of us. If you do have comments, questions, ways that we can make the show better, you can find all of our contact information at about.me/comicbooktesseract. These episodes are posted weekly at thecomicbooknerd.com. Get all your comic book news at thecomicbooknerd.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at jpolioff, and Justin is at felixtcat. That's with a K and two T's. You can go ahead and send us emails, comicbooktesseract@gmail.com, or text us or leave us a voicemail, 50Tesseract. That's 508-377-3722. You can follow us on Google Plus at gplus.to/comicbooktesseract, or follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/comicbooktesseract. Any and all of this information is available at about.me/comicbooktesseract. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week when we step inside the Tesseract.